WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Natalie Moore, in for Sasha Ann Simons. This is Reset. Illinois lawmakers just put the kibosh, or at least hit a long pause button, on a controversial technology to capture and store carbon dioxide underground. Carbon capture is a big part of President Biden's plans for a greener planet. But despite an eagerness in Illinois to jump on the bandwagon, build pipelines, and cash in on huge federal incentives, state lawmakers are backing off. They say things in the young industry are moving too fast, too soon, and want to see federal safety regulations before Illinois gets in on the game. So Reset host Sasha Ann Simons sat down with WBEZ and Grist environmental reporter Juan Pablo Ramirez Franco. Sasha started off by asking Juan Pablo to help us define carbon capture. Here's Juan Pablo.
Think of it this way. It's a controversial climate solution. So the problem it's trying to solve is that there's too much CO2 in the atmosphere. And every day, to kind of keep the world moving, we end up putting more up there. Now, a lot of people around the country want to solve this problem by vacuuming up those emissions and then burying them deep, very deep underground.
Mm-hmm.
This is carbon capture, or CCS.
Yeah.
And basically, this can happen in two ways. One is you use these giant vents to kind of filter the atmosphere piecemeal. We'll call this direct air. And then two, to capture emissions right at the source. So, for example, you plug right into the exhaust of a coal plant or ethanol facility, for example, basically filtering these emissions real time before they go into the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pipe it into another facility, which then pumps it into the ground.
But this is all controversial. Why?
Yeah, it's controversial. So for the most part, opponents of the technology have a lot of concerns around safety, especially around ruptures. It's happened before, just 4 years ago in Mississippi, actually. An underground storage well ruptured, spewed CO2, and hospitalized over 40 people. There's also concerns around how buried CO2 reacts with water or aquifers. That's an issue in central Illinois where a lot of this is popping off. So yeah, this is kind of what people have in their minds while this is happening.
A lot of chatter. So literally, just thinking back to your description, literally you're vacuuming up carbon.
That's a way to put it.
And shoving it under the rug or under the earth, if you will. Is that a long-term solution?
Yeah, and this is part of why it's controversial, right? Which is that what happens when you do that, it's opponents of carbon capture would say, well, you are just kicking it down the can and
yeah. You're
giving a lifeline to fossil fuels. Because, for example, this would be used for coal plants that would otherwise be, there'd be transitioned so that the economy or the grid could move to solar or wind.
Okay, I see. So in Illinois, lawmakers recently passed legislation to sort of pump the brakes on this booming industry here. So tell us about the latest legislation.
So that's right. It's called the Safe CCS Act.
Okay.
The big ticket item here was a moratorium of up to 2 years on pipelines transporting CO2 or until federal authorities pass new pipeline safety guidelines, whichever comes first. Important to note about this is that this is the first of its kind ban in the Midwest.
Oh, really? And any other protections that it offers?
Yeah.
For the state?
Oh, yeah. There were a bunch of other protections. So this includes requiring that captured facilities are more efficient than they operate. So they can't burn more emissions than they actually bury into the ground. Another major get here was that the rules settle some questions over liability and pore space ownership. So carbon capture companies now have to monitor injection sites for at least 30 years and pay into a statewide emergency fund. So if like one of those ruptures happens, we've got the money to do something about
it. Okay.
and pore space. So what is pore space? Pore space is the space underground where CO2 actually gets stored. It wasn't totally clear in Illinois previously who owned this. The law settles it. We know who owns it. The people who own it are the surface owners. Mm-hmm. And if companies want to use this pore space, they got to pony up and pay for it.
Oh my goodness. So tell us more about lawmakers' concerns here.
Yeah, the lawmakers' concerns mirrored a lot of what advocates were worried about, right?
Okay.
So they're worried about safety. They're worried about compensation and really getting this all down into writing before the industry took off, which is why we got that 2-year kind of waiting period before any pipelines get built.
Now, it passed both chambers, as far as I understand here. So does it have the governor's support?
The governor hasn't signed it yet, but he signaled that he will.
Oh, how so? He's on board.
Yeah, he's on board.
For the most part. Who else is celebrating this as a win?
Yeah, this is kind of what's so interesting
about
this
situation. So we know advocates are loving this, for sure.
Yeah, and so it kind of it changes who we think are advocates in this situation, especially when we're talking about an environmental issue, a climate issue, because this issue has brought together farmers, landowners, and environmental advocates. And so all of a sudden, they're on the same team, and they're celebrating this kind of stay on carbon capture or these new regulations on carbon capture.
Mm-hmm. In your reporting, you referred to the carbon capture industry in the U.S. as a sort of a gold rush. What do you mean?
Yeah, so part of what's happened in just the past couple of years is that, one, the Biden administration has pumped billions of dollars into getting carbon capture off the ground. One of the things that happened to make this possible was that federal tax incentives or tax codes were revised to supercharge carbon capture. So there's these tax credits called the 45Q. Essentially, if you store carbon underground permanently, you get paid something like $45 per ton of carbon capture stored.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was that got turboed. And so now it's closer to $85 per ton.
Okay.
And so like when you start thinking about, well, if we're trying to make something feasible, this makes it, I've talked to experts who say that this is like maybe what gets us there. And when we start thinking about what's possible in Illinois, there's over 100, let me make sure I have this number right. Under Illinois, there's an estimated storage capacity of over 100 billion tons.
Oh my
so
gosh.
Just start like multiplying those two
times
numbers.
Times that 85.
I've tried it. My calculator doesn't go that far.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of money on the table right now.
Yeah. I mean, and considering all that money on the stake, I mean, who's not happy about this move from Illinois?
Sure. So we talked about this, right? So there are environmentalists and even scientists that see CCS as a faux climate solution, right? And so what they're seeing is that a bunch of money is getting injected into this idea, this big hope that this pays off, when at the same time we could be injecting that money into all kinds of different solutions, so like solar power, wind, nuclear, anything else. But people are worried that this just isn't going to be it,
mm-hmm.
and we'll find out too late.
Yeah, so I'm wondering then, to that end, Juan Pablo, if this legislation can put some of their concerns to rest, or do we still have more to address?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of, you know, it's a yes and, right? Because what is carbon capture? That's like getting figured out real time. But in terms of safety regulations and what people got on the books, people are happy about that and see that as a positive step, industry and advocates alike.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, yeah. Otherwise, I would say that what advocates are still worried about is setbacks. They want on the books to know how far a pipeline can be from someone's home.
Yeah.
This is still totally unsettled. The other thing is they want protections for the Mahomet Aquifer, which is this aquifer in central Illinois. It's
mm-hmm.
a sole source aquifer, meaning that this is what people rely on for water. Something like 500,000 people need it.
Mm.
And they want protections for it in case something goes wrong.
Yeah. While I have you here, Juan Pablo, on top of covering environmental issues, I know that you have also been keeping your eye on Cicada Watch 2024.
Sure have.
So there's no way I could let you leave without filling us in. You were looking specifically into why this whole cicada apocalypse hasn't actually fully hit the city of Chicago. So what did you find?
Yeah, the cicada apocalypse that never came, right?
Yeah, like, so, I mean, I've seen one, and that was when I was out in the suburbs.
And that was one too many for you?
It was one too many because it got stuck in my car for 24 hours. But well, that's for another day.
That's for another day. So at this point, it's no mystery. Chicago is basically void of cicadas, sadly, in my opinion. I talked to some experts at the Field Museum about this, and they weren't totally surprised. They said Chicago has cut down most of its old trees, which is bad news for cicadas who need old trees. Without trees, there just simply are no cicadas.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed. I kept seeing people tweet photos and, you know, just like walls full of them. And
I know. You're telling me.
So how does this compare to the suburbs then? Because they've seen quite the opposite.
Oh, yeah. It's basically whack-a-mole out there. They're everywhere. They're loud.
Whack-a-mole.
They're flying. They're doing exactly what they're supposed to, which is having a good time with their friends after 17 years underground.
Oh, my goodness. Now, she will remain nameless, but a WBEZ editor here said that she was out in the Southwest burbs, and this was over the weekend. She got attacked, quote, attacked by cicadas. Caught in her hair and everything. It definitely sounds like a different story once you get just a few miles outside of downtown.
Yeah, I mean, first off, I take issue with the framing there, Sasha. The cicadas have been here
again,
much longer than us.
Again, this was not me. This was a, quote, WBEZ
they
editor
were just trying to hang
who
out.
Shall remain nameless.
But that aside, yeah, it's a whole different world. In the suburbs, it's just vibrating with life, which can be annoying for sure. I mean, they are loud. They're like jet engine loud when they're in a chorus, but yeah, it's a different world over there, which is awesome.
So you're waiting for your moment then when they get stuck in your hair and
Sasha,
follow you around?
We just aired a story this morning about cicadas, and in producing that story, a cicada literally flew under my shirt.
Oh my gosh.
And these warm, fuzzy feelings I have for them truly did disappear in that moment, but
you screamed, didn't
but
you?
I wouldn't go that far, but it's just fun having them around.
You've talked to folks for the story about their cicada encounters. What else are you hearing?
Sasha, you're gonna hate me for this, but they are bugging out. I spoke to one person in Beverly.
No pun intended.
I spoke to somebody in Beverly about, you know, she's trying to get, this was like two Fridays ago maybe?
Yeah.
So it's prom. She wants to get her daughter's prom send off perfect, looking beautiful, and there are cicadas all over the place.
Oh my
gosh. And
so,
you know, her plan was, I got to get my husband to pull out the leaf blower. We got to make this look nice. And she sent me some pictures afterwards, and it looked beautiful. Everything looked great. And so she said, she was so funny. She said, they took mercy on me this time. Just like a couple days afterwards, she was like, they were terrible. So
oh
like,
my
it
gosh.
It was perfect.
Well, you know, after hearing your cicada escapade, there are colleagues of ours at the Sun-Times, I don't know if you know this, and they actually ate beer-battered fried cicadas.
Where was my invite?
Yeah, so you would try this?
Yeah, I would try it. Sasha, what? Once every 17 years, of course.
But you would eat it?
Chomp, chomp, chomp.
Yeah. if folks listening are interested, they can actually watch this on the Sun-Times Instagram page.
Awesome. Okay, I'm going to check that out first.
Oh, my gosh. Now, while the cicada cycle, you know, it can be weirdly fascinating, there are plenty of people, like me, counting down the days until we actually say goodbye to them, Juan Pablo. So tell me, before I let you go, how long do we have left, in your view?
Yeah, let me answer that in two ways. One, the periodical cicadas raging in the suburbs, they'll be dead and gone, unfortunately, in a couple weeks by July. They'll be gone. But really, there's no saying goodbye to the cicadas, Sasha. They're not really going anywhere. The newborn cicada nymphs will just be beginning their 17-year journey underground, and we can catch up with them in 2041. But again, I want to emphasize this. They're still going to be here, just underground.
Underground. All right. That is WBEZ and Grist Environment reporter Juan Pablo Ramirez Franco. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, Sasha.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and edited by Meha Ahmad. It was mixed by Max Lubers. To stay up to date with the stories and news in Chicago, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. We'll talk again this afternoon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.